Hi people, welcome to the People Podcast. This week, as you'll see, we've got a fancy new intro. So we thought we'd do a audio intro as well, just outlining what we kind of covered on this week's episode. I've got Jack, the producer, here with me as well.
Hello.
So this week we had JR on. He's a man of many masks, a fascinating guy, and he's super open and honest, so we were able to kind of delve in and go down a few different rabbit holes with him, which was so much fun. I can't remember what we first started with.
Was it 2 weeks ago when we delved into so JR plays roller derby, and if you're anything like us, we had no idea what that was until we met him. He's actually the captain of Glasgow men's roller derby team, as well as representing Scotland. So he travels around the world playing roller derby, which is very interesting. So listen up for that.
So he's a super competitive guy, like balls deep into roller derby, loves it. But it only kind of realized that he was a super competitive guy quite kind of late on. So we touch on that and what other kind of parts of his life he feels competitive about as well. And then where did we go from there?
That's what we talk about. Oh, yeah, moved from Glasgow.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So. JR was initially from Glasgow and moved down here to be with his boyfriend Michael, also a friend of ours. So we touched on the move from Glasgow down here, what it's like in Newcastle by comparison to Glasgow, as well as his relationship, past relationships, jealousy, open relationships. It's a really fascinating conversation.
Yeah, and what it's like to be gay, what coming out was like, the kind of different... the way that straight relationships and open relationships are different. Anyway, we learned a lot. I hope you find kind of the same things as well. I found it interesting. Enjoy.
Welcome to the People Podcast.
So my old best friend, who I've not seen in ages, like phoned me up one Saturday morning and was like, oh, she'd recently joined the Glasgow women's team. And she was like, right, we need to help. Someone's pulled out. We need to help like selling the merchandise. Do you fancy coming along? And I was like, right, fair enough. Yeah, I'll come along. Watched it and I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
So at that point you had no clue what roller derby was?
I hadn't even heard of it. Hadn't seen, like, there's a movie called Whip It.
No, I've not seen it.
It's got Ellen Page in it.
Yeah. Whip It.
Yeah, which is what, if you say roller derby, people, they've seen Whip It and they think that's what it's like, and it's not like the movie at all.
Right. So don't watch Whip It.
I would watch it because you get a general gist of, like, it is on skates, it is like a race, and you are hitting each other, but it's just, that's more dramatised.
Okay.
Is that a word?
Well, yeah, no, I think that's like everything. Have you ever watched Invictus? Invictus is like a film about the South African Rugby World Cup.
Oh, no.
With
I've seen it, but not seen the movie.
Right, okay. This is it's got Matt Damon as Francois Pinault, like the South African Rugby captain, and it's got Morgan Freeman as Nelson Mandela. Yeah. And like, you watch that and it's like, wow, that is just Hollywood taking it to the extreme. It's not at all what the rugby is really like, but yeah.
But so I've seen that, and at that point there wasn't men's teams, like, really. There was like one or two men's teams in the UK at that point. So I joined as a referee, and then we started. There was like a Team Scotland. It wasn't Team Scotland. It was just all the male referees decided to get together and be like, oh, let's start actually playing roller derby. And then that kind of fell apart pretty quickly because it was people from like Dundee and Aberdeen and people from Edinburgh and Glasgow, and it was just difficult to meet up.
Yeah.
So then we started a team in Glasgow. Well, and that was like...
Sorry, carry on.
That was like 3.5 years we played with that team, and we were always a shit team. I think we won like 2 games out of the load of games that we played. We were really bad. But a few of us were really, really good, and we wanted to concentrate more on playing really competitive roller derby instead of like this sort of let's just have some fun and like. So we left and started Glasgow Men's Roller Derby.
At this stage, how big is roller derby in? Do you only really play in Glasgow? Is that a Glasgow league, or are you playing throughout Scotland?
So there's only three men's teams in Scotland.
Right. Okay. So you're playing throughout the UK.
So we went over to Barcelona last year, last August, to play.
Was that for a tournament, or was that for...
Yeah, for a tournament. So we played a team from Belgium, played a team from France, and played... Oh, what was the other team we played? We played 3 teams. And a team from Finland.
Right, okay.
And then we went over to Finland and played the team from Belgium again, and the new team from Finland.
Now, how long does an average game last?
So it's two half-hour periods.
Okay, so it's like an hour long.
But there's like stoppage time, so I'd say maybe like 35, sometimes 40 minutes a half, because you get stoppage time.
And you, when you're like in a tournament like that, do you just play loads of games consecutively and then...
Sometimes, so when there's loads of teams, like generally you'll play a game and you'll get a nice rest between the next game that you play, like, but if there's only three teams, then someone has to play each other back to back.
Right, yeah.
No, so we went to Finland and drew the short straw. They just drew names out of a hat for who was going to have to play, so we played two games in a row.
It's quite physically demanding though, like cardio-wise, rugby, like tackle-wise.
It's very physically demanding.
Yeah.
Like, I went to Finland, I'm a pretty fit guy. My skating time is like halved since I moved to Newcastle because I can't go every training session sort of thing to Glasgow.
So your skating time is halved? Oh, yeah. The amount of time you spend practice. Skating, right? Yeah, okay, yeah.
And then, so we played the first game and it was a really tough team. They beat us by quite a lot, which we were kind of expecting. They were really organised and like just, it was a really good game. And then we had like 30 minute break and then started playing the second team and I just cramped, like every single muscle in my body was just like, I'm going to cramp for you right now. So you're like, it was fine while I was skating, but as soon as I stopped skating, like every muscle in my body was like intensely cramping. It was so bad.
And you ever like have big injuries from, because it's quite like physical tackles in my opinion.
People do, but I've never, like the worst I've had is like a sore wrist.
Right. You wear helmets?
Yeah, you have to wear.
And pads? Because it's like a velodrome floor.
No, that's like Whippet is like the velodrome
right,
type.
Okay.
It's like a banked track, they call it.
Yeah,
where
yeah,
we play
yeah.
flat track roller derby.
So the idea is what it is. How many people per team, do you say?
So you have 15 people is the maximum number you can have on each team. So you can play with less than that.
Okay, cool. So it's variable numbers. Nice.
Yeah, so I've played with 8 skaters before. So it means you're pretty much always on. Like you don't get a rest.
Yeah.
So the way that it works is like you have... Each half-hour period is divided into what are called jams, and they can be up to 2 minutes.
Okay.
So you'll send 5 people on the track for 2 minutes, and then that once that 2 minutes is done, you send the next 5 people from your team, so you're not staying on.
Right.
And then you'll keep switching.
It's like rolling
people
subs.
Out. Yeah.
So how does a jam end?
Either once 2 minutes is over, or so to get, I'll take it back a little bit.
Okay.
So you have your 5 skaters on the track. One of them's the point scorer,
yeah.
called the jammer.
He's got a star on his head.
They wear the star on their helmet, yeah. They're the only person that can score points.
Okay.
By passing the other team on the track. If you pass the other team before the other jammer passes the other team, you get what's called lead jammer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can stop that jam whenever you want.
Okay.
And I do this because you stop the jam by tapping your hips.
Right, okay.
So the referee sees the lead jammer tapping their hips, and then it's called off.
You go to the next one. So is it like there's an attacking team and a defensive team at all times then?
Both teams are both.
Oh, both teams are both?
Yeah. So you have 2 jammers and 4 blockers, 8 blockers on the track.
So does it end when either size jammer jams? Or do both size jammers have to jam? Is that right? Have I got that right?
Both jammers are jamming at once.
Right.
You'll see it. Like, if we do put it up on the screen, you'll see it. Like, both jammers are jamming at once.
Okay.
And all the blockers are on the track at once.
Do you have a video, Jack?
Did I get the... I don't think they
have. Oh, have I not got my HDMI 1.
So, yeah, it's easier to describe when you can watch it.
Okay, yeah.
So, like...
This is all played on. Yeah, we.
The viewers may not.
We've actually started,
but,
which.
Yeah.
This is all played on rollerblades, in a hall, and it's kind of a game of what we used to call it open gates when we were younger. But basically, you've got to get to one person has got to get to the goal line. Is that right?
Kind of, but the goal line is just getting past other people.
Got you. Yeah, so it's a moving goal line. So that's the scorer there with the star on his head.
Yeah.
And how do you tell who the jammer is?
They have the star on their helmet.
The jammer and the scorer?
The scorer is the jammer.
Right.
That's
okay.
The name for the... I always just say the scorer, but they are called the jammer.
For citizens, for normal
people.
Yeah,
so you see they've got the stars on the helmet, so they're the jammers.
She looks pretty intense.
Yeah?
Check the chick chasing her. Do you have a video of it, Jack?
Yeah.
I'll see it in action. Do you get paid to play roller derby as the top?
No. People get sponsored by like, so if you're like the really top level and you're a really good skater at the top level, then you'll get sponsored by different. They're like one of the top teams, which is they're from Portland, Oregon.
Is this big in the States? Is that where it's like biggest?
Yeah. Most of the top teams are from the States.
So if you were to go over to the States, would you be able to like make it for a
team? I reckon I would get into like a pretty high level team, yeah. If I were to go to like Portland, or if I were to go to St. Louis, which is the number one men's team.
And you like dedicate your life to
getting probably get put in the B team initially, but yeah. I think I'd work my way up.
So you think like you've got like a natural talent for it, or is it just that you found
that's why like I started skating with the women's team, learning as a referee, and I picked it up like that. Like
oh,
it's
really?
The first thing in my life that I've ever just been naturally good at.
No other kind of athletic, because it seems like a sport that just demands a lot of all-round athletic ability, so I assume if you're good at that and you can pick it up naturally, you'd be good at loads of stuff.
I feel like now if I were to like attempt another sport, I would be good at it. Like I would be better at it. But before, I never was interested in sports.
Interesting.
Like I would play badminton when I was a teenager, like for fun, or I would play five-a-side football occasionally.
Yeah.
But I was never very good at either.
Ooh, I reckon you can get badly hurt at that. You know, ankles.
Oh, people.
Heavy.
People break their ankles and wrists.
Because it's like wrestling, but with.
It's quite a lot of like you get a lot of double breaks, so you like tib and fib. So tibula and fibula.
I think those are the ones. Yeah. Not a doctor.
Usually, actually, what generally happens is people don't break themselves during gameplay. Like they usually when you're learning how to skate. So if you join a roller derby team, they'll teach you how to skate before they make you play roller derby. That's okay. When breakages happen. Like when people aren't good on skates, they'll put their foot down wrong and suddenly like everything's broken.
And they don't know how to fall or anything like that.
Yeah. So the first thing you get taught is how to fall.
Wrists as well?
Sometimes, yeah, but you've got pretty sturdy wrist guards on, so it's not as common. It's usually ankle or leg breaks.
God.
But even then, it's not... You're more likely to break yourself playing basketball, like statistically.
Okay. But that was the... my audio's not... I was talking to the mic. That video was all of women playing. Is the men a lot more brutal? Is a lot more aggressive?
It's more physical, yeah.
What's the ideal build for like a roller derby person?
I don't think there is one.
Everyone can play.
There's uses for whatever build.
There's different positions.
Because like, I'm a scrawny guy. Like I'm a pretty skinny guy. Like,
but you're fast on that.
But I'm quite fast and agile. And then you've got people on my team are like... Although you've got people that are like fucking huge and they're also fast and agile, which just fuck those guys.
Yeah, I know the guys and wankers.
Like if you, like one of my teammates, Phil, is like, used to do bodybuilding, is like really into like all that sort of stuff. He's like 18 stone, like maybe 19 stone of pure muscle. Like he's like, just looks like a Viking, has long hair, big beard, like absolutely huge. And you'd look at him and you'd be like, he's a blocker, but he's a jammer and he's like nimble as fuck.
Does that mean make him like an incredibly good jammer? Teams like scared of him because he's huge and a jammer. It's like, so in rugby, there's like, you have centres and fly halves and whatever. Fly halves are generally like slightly smaller players, whatever. But if there is a big fly half or a big scrum half or something like that, mm-hmm. then you're like, shit, if he's playing scrum half and he's that big, then.
He's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be, yeah.
Like, if it was like described as a ballerino.
Ballerino.
Right, because he's like huge and hulking, and like if you take a hit from him, you're most likely gonna hit the ground. But he can also just like fly past you and twirl and jump. And
you wear like mouth guards and everything like that.
Yeah,
because it sounds brutal, man.
It is. Like, see if you go on YouTube, there'll be better videos because that was like a highlight reel sort of video, so you don't get a feel from it.
Tell
if you go on YouTube and if you type in St. Louis gatekeepers, yeah. Yeah, and just if you just stick that on and like click through the video, just wherever.
You can skip video.
So I can sort of describe what's happening through the game, because it's difficult like from a highlight reel to see anything. So you see, both teams are on the track. Both teams have. So that jammer.
Right. Okay. Yeah. There's a dude trying to use a tiny jammer.
Yeah.
Is that what you?
He's
you play
actually
jammer?
Usually a blocker, and he's phenomenal.
Do you know of these guys?
Yeah,
that's how good they are.
I know most. I know most of the guys in the white. Like I know their names.
Shit.
Because they've been the number one team for the past 4 years.
Who's this? It's St. Louis Gatekeepers.
Yep.
What are they doing there? Why are they holding him?
To stop him from getting their point.
It's just the one guy.
So he that was the other jammer, came back from a penalty.
Right, okay, so if you...
So they should be helping him. Like, what ideally what they should be doing is taking those blockers away so that he can get past easier, but they were just waiting.
So if you're the jammer, are you typically, like, on your own and everyone else is trying to get the other guy?
So you'll have, like, you'll have an offensive... Generally, people will be designated offense. So you'll have three people. The way we do it in our team, and most teams, like, the sort of meta for it is, like, you've got three people who will block... They'll concentrate on the other team's jammer, mm-hmm. and one person will be there to help you. So they'll be trying to take people out of your way, hitting people off the track.
Yeah.
The other thing is, if you get hit off the track, you have to come back on the track behind whoever hit you off.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, if they hit you off at, like, point one, mm-hmm. or at point three, and then they skate back to point one, you need to go back off the track to point one.
Like,
and
sections on the track to say, like, where is point one and point three?
Not really, like... It is divided into 10 foot sections, mm-hmm. but they're not marked or anything. Like, that's just so that the referees can keep track a bit better.
It must have been pretty hard to ref a sport that you didn't know when you first started, or without having, like, played it or anything.
Yeah, the rules change, like, every 2 years as well.
It's an evolving sport.
Yeah, so because it's a really new sport, like, the rules are updated to sort of when things become broken. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, the same in a video game, if something's OP, then it needs to be, like, taken back a notch, so they'll change the rules so that, like, jammers or blockers don't have more of an advantage over each other.
Yeah, yeah, so it's a little bit more balanced of a game, yeah, yeah. I got that, yeah.
So there's things like, you can't block with your arms.
So you okay, so it's all shoulders and...
Yeah, it has to be from, like, your sort of middle of your... whatever this part of your arm, upper arm, okay. to your shoulder, you're allowed to block with.
And not allowed, like, fully grab someone and tackle
you can't, them. Like, you can't use below your thighs.
Yeah.
So you can't kick people or trip people.
Okay.
So it's all hips and shoulders, really.
So what happens when there's a foul?
You go to the bin for 30 seconds.
Okay. Nice. So you said the first sport that you kind of got involved with, and you travel all the way up to Glasgow to train how often?
Every few weeks. Okay, like, so, I would go every week if I could afford it.
So you still... How many years have you been playing for now?
This is my sixth year.
So you still bang into it after 6 years now?
Well, it kind of feels like... So this is what I was saying to Michael. Like, this is what it's like. I feel like I've only just started playing roller derby.
Really?
Because we played such shit roller derby. Like, we were such a shit team. Like,
there's so many levels to it that you're learning more and more and more.
Yeah, and we've finally got to that sort of upper tier of roller derby. Like, in the UK anyway.
Wow, that's... That's
I only feel
something.
Like I've just started playing roller derby, so I feel like I've got another few years before I would consider.
That's great. That's awesome. So you just loads of longevity in it, just in terms of the feedback that it gives you, like the enjoyment you get out of it. In terms of ages, how old do people play for? How physically demanding
there's
is it?
There's people that are like 50 years old playing
roller
derby.
You've got plenty of time. You could be like the greatest roller derby person ever.
And most people play for like 10 years. Like 10 years seems to be like... The burnout sort of, I would say the average burnout period, like, for people playing roller derby. Because there's also, like, it comes with a lot of politics, like...
Roller derby.
Because it's all ran by the skaters. So, like, there's a lot of conflict of interest and, like, we've done a pretty good job at Glasgow Men's Roller Derby of not really having that sort of issue. Like, we've had politics in terms of people's opinion of our team, mm-hmm. but not, like... Not within the league, so it's all went pretty smoothly.
Inside's a pretty good bunch. People treat people quite
We all nice have the same sort of goal. Like, we all want the same out of roller derby. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, with our previous team, there was, like, half of us wanted to play really competitive and, like, play for, like, positioning. So, like first in the UK sort of thing. Like, and then half the team wanted to just enjoy themselves and not really worry about it, which is fair enough. Like, you can do either. So that's why we left and... started our own team.
You were in the former group.
Yeah.
They wanted to take it to the next level. So you're at the team now that you're captain of in Glasgow. Where are they ranked in the UK?
I can't really remember. Like, so by the end of last year, our first year was 2017, like the first year that we played. And we played 11 games and won all but one. And we played a bunch of teams that we'd played with our previous team and always lost against, and we played them expecting to lose but maybe not by so much, and we beat them all.
Shit.
So like, we obviously knew we had like a good thing, like
that's pretty impressive.
And then we came out of that like seventh in Europe, at the highest point, but then we've kind of went down to 11th once the scores are all calibrated, sort of thing, I think.
That's crazy, though. So you formed a team based on a half team that wanted to carry on playing. Where did you find the other players?
So the Edinburgh team at about that time had folded recently.
Okay.
So we absorbed quite a lot of their skaters.
Great.
And that was mostly it.
Joined a super. Yeah. Effectively, is that now your Scottish national team, basically?
No, because there's a team in Aberdeen, sorry.
Okay. They've got good players as well.
Yeah, they had three skaters on the national team. We had six skaters on the national team.
That's quite diversified.
And then there was skaters from teams in England who were also on Team Scotland.
Shit, yeah. Doing fairly well in. Is it a European league or is it a UK league then?
It's not really done in leagues. It's not like a league play.
It's just tournaments that randomly happen.
So you just get rankings through like your score versus other team scores versus other games that have happened, sort of thing. If that makes sense.
Yeah, kind of. I got you. Yeah.
So like if we play
UFC.
Yeah, if we play like the number 10 ranked team in Europe and beat them, then the way that it would usually work out, depending on weird score differences elsewhere, we would then become like 10th and they would become 11th, mm-hmm. sort of thing.
Yeah, I got you. And it's like, okay, so you've been playing for 6 years, captain of Glasgow, and then recently moved to Newcastle.
Yeah.
And that must have been quite a big, tough challenge because it's obviously a passion of yours. And yeah. You say you've only kind of started it and you obviously want to continue it. How did that transition go? What was the kind of drive to move here?
So I didn't really have a life outside of roller derby.
It's just...
And it was...
So that's like 4 years or so.
Yeah, and because we are from like... My team is from all over Scotland, so we've got like just under half the team are from Edinburgh.
Mm.
Like just under half the team are from Glasgow, and then there's like... Phil comes from Dundee, which is like a two-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
And a few people come from like other parts of Scotland dotted around because we're a team worth playing with, so they'll travel for it, sort of thing. Not to sound too big-headed about my own team.
It sounds like you guys are doing awesome.
So, yeah, I just...
So your life in Glasgow was all roller derby, and the people that were your Glaswegian life didn't live in Glasgow, so they're not part of your day-to-day.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I just felt like I've always lived in Glasgow, and I just wanted a change, and I was like, Newcastle's ideal. Obviously, Michael's here, so...
You met Michael before then?
What do you mean?
Met him before you moved here.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. How did you meet Michael? I don't actually know the story. All right, okay.
So we started talking like 3-4 years ago.
Oh, so you've known each other ages.
Yeah, we weren't like close or anything. We just had like conversations like every now and then sort of thing.
But always kind of fancied each other.
Yeah, and then like sort of towards the start of the year, like we were talking a lot more and it went... Things were from there. I came and met him, and then
you came down here. Yeah, you took the first move.
Yeah,
took
the initiative. Well, I was living with my parents at the time, so it would have been a bit awkward if he came and met me. Then moved down here in May.
Yeah, and how's that been? You enjoy Newcastle?
I love Newcastle.
Yeah,
I really love Newcastle.
It's a lot smaller than Glasgow. I've never been to Glasgow, but I've heard Glasgow is huge.
Yeah, I'd say it's like just under a third the size of Glasgow.
Okay, or a lot smaller, but similar in terms of the architecture. It's like an old red brick kind of city.
Yep, in terms of the architecture, in terms of like, I would say just in terms of the vibe as well, like the feeling like from the people you get here is like very similar to the feeling in Glasgow. Like
it's a northern city, isn't it? The people in Newcastle are extremely friendly.
Yeah, it's the same in Glasgow. Like Glasgow has a reputation for being like a really rough city, but What I always say to people is Glasgow is a huge city. Like, it's really, really big. And it's only rough if you go to the rough areas, which you don't come anywhere near if you're going to see anything worth seeing in Glasgow. Like, unless you want to go and see some terraced houses, like, then you're never going to really come into much trouble in Glasgow at all.
Yeah.
Unless you go to those sorts of bars, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Then you're probably the sort of person that wants some trouble.
What did you do in Glasgow before roller derby?
Got stoned. That was pretty much it.
Stoned.
I passed my minimum skills assessment like high as a kite.
There's minimum skills assessment in roller derby.
Yeah, you have to pass your minimum skills before you can actually play
roller
derby.
Like your license, basically.
Yeah.
Man, it sounds like quite an intense sport. I don't know many sports that have a license in it.
It's not a license. Like, you just get... You know, yeah. Like, certain teams, some teams will have, like, a much stricter policy on their minimum skills, so you'll have to get it the way that it's supposed to be, and some people will be like, that was good enough, you can skate roller derby now.
What do you think the future of the Glaswegian... What was the name of your team, sorry?
Glasgow Men's Roller Derby.
Glasgow Men's Roller Derby.
Yeah.
What's the goal? You said you always kind of wanted to, that you had something to look forward to in your team.
What do you mean?
You said earlier on that when you split out from the team that you had,
yeah.
You were like, what path of you want to kind of get to this level in Europe and have this goal in mind? What is the kind of...
I think just to be the best team that we can be, as cheesy as that sounds like, but just to play like... So I would say there's like four or five teams in the UK that are like the top of roller derby in the UK,
mm-hmm.
and we'd just like to be in amongst that. Like,
wait, how far off do you think you are?
Well, all of those teams have been established like as top level teams for like...
Do you want a beer?
No, I'm good actually.
I will get you a beer, but I'm not sure about the gesture.
All of those teams have been like established and playing at the top level for like 5 years, 6 years. So they've like, we've only just started playing at that level. So,
okay.
But then, I would say give it like 2 years.
Right. And are you playing against those teams now? Or they?
We have. We've got annihilated.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they're leaps and bounds ahead of you at the moment.
Yeah. Like London are undefeated.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, like ever?
In the UK.
Shit.
I think maybe they have been defeated in like a closed door game that no one knows the score to or whatever, because closed door things sort of happen.
Mm.
But like publicly, they've never been defeated. I think by no one in Europe. They've not been defeated by anyone in Europe.
The goal is to get into the top five in the UK.
Yeah.
Shit. Do you think it's achievable? Do you think you need to bring in new talent? Do you think?
This is what we started doing this year, was a bit of recruitment. Like, so you get new skaters, and it's been tough. Like, it's a difficult thing to do people to join a sport that they've never heard of. Or
how do you even go about doing that? Because there's not like a roster of roller derby players nationally.
So typically, what happens is you've got a female team, like a women's team, and they've got boyfriends who then will join the team. But like, we've only just started really having a relationship with like Glasgow Roller Derby, who are they've been established for like 12 years, 13 years now.
So was it traditionally a female sport?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Always.
Okay.
Like,
so the female sport is quite big.
Yeah, it's much bigger. So they get ESPN coverage and stuff.
Oh, right,
whereas
okay.
Whereas the men's sport doesn't really get anything like that.
Right. And you contact the boyfriends and see if they're keen for it.
Yeah.
Interesting. And has that worked out? Have you found anyone?
We've had three new skaters this year.
No way.
Well, we've had like five, and then we've kept three of them.
When someone turns up, is it either like straight away this guy's going to be shit, or this guy's something?
Most people are shit.
Yeah.
Like, most people have never skated before.
Yeah.
Like, the vast majority of people have never skated before, so...
And how long does it take to get from shit to decent?
It varies so widely. Like, it varies really, really widely. Like, I would say I picked up really quickly, like, really very quickly for someone who'd never skated before.
Yeah.
And then some people take 2 years before they're any good.
I bet you I'd be shit. I just don't have those natural kind of cohorts. I'm decent at most sports, but I've been on roller skates before, and I fall down a lot. And I get frustrated that I've fallen down. It wouldn't be a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, some people come and they try it, and if they don't pick it up at least a little bit straight away, then they just don't bother.
Yeah, I can imagine it's very... frustrating. Like, snowboarding's like that. Have you ever snowboarded?
No.
So I've only snowboarded once or twice, and that is solid. It's really, really hard.
See, I feel like I'd be good at it. This is one of those things I think about. I'm like, I feel like I'd be good at that now.
You probably would be, yeah. So have you ever skateboarded?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's nothing like that. I thought, all right, well, skateboarder to kind of surf a little bit as well, so I'll know how to do it. And, you know, it's all on, like, your toes or your heels, so...
Yeah.
You're not going. You're not going that way. You're going that way. Yeah, you probably would be quite.
Because it's all about like where your weight's positioned over your wheels. So you've got your back wheels.
You'd probably
front wheels.
Be very, very good at snowboarding. Yeah.
Except from to change direction, you're going that way to that way instead of that way to that way. So you kind of pick up speed if you lean forward, and you not so much slow down, but like,
but just being able to being used to that weight distribution forward and back is not something a lot of people are used to. So so never played a sport before roller derby, but I've been playing it now for six years up to a point where your goal is to compete nationally and internationally, or you are competing internationally, being part of the men's Scottish team. Before that, never played any other sports. What do you think is, why do you think roller derby caught you in such a way? Why do you think you're so competitive and driven with this, but weren't with other sports that you played?
Initially, it was a very like alternative sport.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you look at roller derby 10 years ago, like the women's roller derby 10 years ago, it was all like rocker chicks, in air quotes. Like, so it was all like, people wore tutus and fishnet tights and wore loads of makeup, and people still wear makeup. That's kind of still part of the tradition, but
yeah, I saw in the video. So does it come from like metal cities in America? Right.
So I was kind of like, I've always been like an alternative sort of guy. Like, okay. Went through my emo phase and my metalhead phase.
Did you have like long droopy hair?
So many.
Can we find a photo of that?
Long droopy hairs. Do you have Instagram me on Facebook? Because you won't find a photo
A photo of Jay or a photo of an emo person? Because I've got plenty of me, I think.
Hopefully both of those criteria can be ticked. Anyway.
So I just seen it and it just felt really organized. And obviously I'm quite like left wing politically. So it's all very like by the skater, for the skater, grassroots, like women's empowerment sort of thing. And I was like, this is so cool. I just need to be involved in it. So I started as a referee. I didn't have any knowledge or intention of actually playing the sport. So I learned from the women's team while they taught all of their new skaters. And then I was like, man, I really want to play this.
Okay, so that's roller derby.
Yeah.
And you bang into it, doing really well, very competitive, and doing it for 6 years. So there's if you're doing anything on a competitive level for 6 years, there's layer upon layer upon layer of,
well, I've only been doing it competitively for approaching 2 years now. I would say like competitively for 2 years.
Proper competitive. Yeah, yeah. Okay. But it's still giving you a lot out of it, so it must be incredibly demanding and must, how am I trying to phrase this? It must pick out certain elements of you, like it must demand a certain things of you, which I've noticed because I play Rocket League with you that, I mean, so me and my friends have been playing Rocket League for a couple of years, a long time. When we met you, and you started playing and you liked it, but weren't very good because you just started, and now you're better than all of us. And it's like only been 3 or 4 months.
I don't think I'm better than Will. I'm trying.
Yeah, but okay, well, and include Will in that because Will has also done the same thing. He started way later as well, and is all better than all of us. But there was a core group of like 5 of us, and you're better than all 5 of us. We've been playing for like 2 years. I don't understand how that happens. But you must be super competitive naturally.
Yeah, I guess I am.
But you never had this before, roller derby?
Or I'm not usually in like competitive situations. So I've never really thought of myself as like a competitive person.
Interesting.
But like, I guess I am. Like, with roller derby, it's kind of interesting. Like, if a team beats you, it's not like, I've never been bet by a team and been disappointed by it. Like, I've never felt like I think usually competitive people, when they lose, feel like some sort of emotion about it.
To a point, I get what you're saying.
Whereas, like, that's the thing about roller derby is like it's this like high octane, like competitive, full contact sport.
More the all round buzz.
But like, if someone hits you off the track or hits you down to the ground, like they'll give you a hand up.
Mm.
Like maybe not during gameplay, but like, or you'll give them a high five for such a good hit. Like if you watch, like I played in Finland and it was like live streamed and it was filmed. And like one of the guys on that team I'm good friends with, so like he kept hitting me off the track, and every single thing was just like a little high five, like as I was coming back on the track, and then straight back to it. And it's like, I don't think you get many sports, especially like sports played by guys that are like...
Rugby is like that. Rugby is very... Football is the exact opposite. I think the difference... I always thought the difference, the reason why people like that in football is like because they can't hurt you.
Yeah.
Where in rugby, you can tackle the guy pretty hard. And like even rugby, if you get like a good tackle on someone else, then they're normally like, oh, if they were off a punch or something like that, afterwards in the pub, they'll be like, oh, that was a good punch, or that was a good tackle kind of thing. So yeah.
I think as well, like football's typically more working class.
Mm.
And generally like the sort of working class thing is like more chavs, as you call them, and
So what kind of socioeconomic background would you say people are from on roller derby are from? Is it just completely mixed?
It's so mixed.
Yeah, that like, must be quite like, nice.
This is another reason like I really like it. We could talk about roller derby all night. Like there's so much to talk about for it. Like it's a good reflection on like the good in society and also the bad in society when you get into the just sort of political side of things.
Just people in a nice little spectrum.
Yeah. Because nice. You've got people that are like, Phil's a nurse, I'm a barista, Thomas is a barber.
Mm.
Like, you've got people in the women's team that are like scientists and like, it's just literally a just
bag, yeah.
And you've no got one, students, no one you've got like
thinks they're better than themselves. There's no kind of like
nah, nothing like that.
Yeah, like, that's nice. It tends to happen, I think, when you've got like a relatively small community. People just see people as people rather than mm-hmm. the labels that are so easily attached in large numbers, kind of thing.
The best thing about it, I think, as well, is like I could move to any city in the world, and
that is cool.
There'll be a community that I can just immediately make friends in.
That is
like,
cool.
This is I told Ellis to like. Join the roller derby team.
She'd be good at roller derby.
She would be. She tried my skates on, and like they're two sizes too big for her, and they're pretty big skates. And she was like, in Heaton Park Road, she was just like doing turns and jumps and like picked up like that. And I was like, do it.
Yeah, she'd have a great time. No, I love that. I love that whole thing about having a sport, having a thing that you follow, and then anywhere in the world that you can just kind of plug into that social network. Mm-hmm. So, any grand aspirations for Rocket League?
I just enjoy getting better at it.
Yeah. Is that what drives you? Do you think the ranking system has a lot to play in it? Because we had Jake here on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he was saying he's super competitive,
mm-hmm.
but for him, it's all about being better than his peers, kind of pushing, being rewarded. He loves being like a meritocracy where people are rewarded for being better than other people, yeah. kind of thing. That's why he loves where he works. And I'm always quite fascinated as to why people are motivated and why people are competitive.
I just enjoy the process of getting better at things.
That's nice. Yeah, I like that.
Like, it's the same with roller derby. Like, there's so many different skills that you can do on skates. Like, so many different things that you may not even be able to think that you can do on skates, but you see someone do it and I'll think, I want to be able to do that.
Mm.
Like, I remember when I was first learning how to skate and some top level skater came up and was teaching the better skaters from Glasgow Roller Derby at the time, and he'd done a transition on one foot. Like, he was on one foot and he just turned around on that one foot without putting his other foot down. I was like, to me that was like, you can't get better than that. Like, yeah. You can, but like, and I can do one footed transitions like no bother, but there's so much that you can just keep doing, and you'll see someone in a team like during a game that does something that's just crazy, like, and I'll be like, okay, I want to do that. I want to be able to do that.
You like that with Rocket League as well.
I like that with Rocket League.
You see someone boost jumping, you're like, oh, I needed to be able to do that, and then you are practicing boost jumps between games the other day.
I mean, I will sit for an hour and just practice like a skill in Rocket League.
Do you think you've always had that characteristic, or is it just something that's been developed in you when you were an adult?
I usually give up on things.
So like, if you were to describe your childhood competitive, do you just try something and not be asked? What was your kind of childhood like? I really don't know much of you about you other than you lived in Glasgow and didn't play roller derby.
It was pretty normal, like.
Well, what's a normal Glaswegian childhood like?
I don't know. Like, a kind of middle class family, like, went to a decent school. Like,
what do your parents do?
My mum's a social worker and my dad
you don't have to say if you don't want.
No, I just don't really know how to. My dad doesn't have like a job title, I don't think, that you would necessarily know what he does, but he does like AutoCAD for like big ships.
Oh, I know exactly what that is. I used to do AutoCAD, yeah.
So like, I don't know.
He's a CAD technician.
No, that doesn't ring a bell.
Draftsman.
Right. I think that might be it. Like, I think he probably does more than that now, but
yeah,
he makes a lot of money.
Makes the drawings for engineers and stuff like that.
Yes.
And architects. Yeah. So, now they do get paid very, very well. It's a very good skill. But I did it for like a year when I was an intern at a very basic level. The same thing as what you're doing.
Weirdly enough, he just never really talks about what he does. Like, I know mom was a social worker because I was there when she went through university to become a social worker.
And she stayed late.
Yeah, she was a nurse. We lived in America.
You lived in America?
Yeah, for 3 years.
Actually, that rings bells.
I don't remember it. So
your parents not American? They're both Scottish?
No, they're both Scottish.
Okay, so they moved over there.
Yeah.
Had you... You had any brothers and sisters?
No, they had me, then moved over there.
Okay.
And then we moved back when I was, like, 5.
Why did they move there?
Because my dad just got a really well-paying job.
Okay, and moved back?
Because he got an even better paying job back with his family. So
nice, yeah. And whereabouts in the States were you?
San Diego.
You remember it all?
I remember, like, it's like flashback memories. Like, I remember, like, and I also remember all the things that I've seen in videos, but it's not really a memory. It's just because I've seen them back, so, like, I know they happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember...
Right, yeah, you got that refresh from...
Yeah. Like, so not really. I wouldn't say I have, like, actual memories from it.
3's pretty young, yeah.
Well, I moved there when I was 2 and came back when I was 5.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be some there. So, growing up Glasgow, your mother's a social worker, so that must explain why you've got such a...
Well, they're both from working class backgrounds as well. Like, they're both very working class. They're both, like, very sort of liberal, left-wing, like... Well,
that's what I was going to say, because we've had previous conversations about left-wing politics and what have you, and you've got a strong passion for it, and I'm... You'd be surprised how many people I speak to whose parents worked in social work and kind of feel that way. It's because you see all spectrums of society, and you see the people that really need taken care of, and mm-hmm. that political spectrum kind of puts that right at the forefront of what they're about. Yeah.
And then there was obviously, like, I was never really that political. Like, I was always interested in it. I always found it interesting to, like, know about what was happening in politics.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never really, I wouldn't have ever, up until the Scottish independence campaign, I was never really, like, an activist.
Mm-hmm.
And I still wouldn't say, I still wouldn't call myself an activist. Like, I don't...
So just explain what the Scottish... I roughly know what it is, but it was to be part of the UK or part or not, and this happened in 2015, pre-Brexit, so this was,
yeah,
it was on the cards.
The reason that Brexit happened was because the Scottish independence campaign happened, and people in England were up in arms about how we got a referendum, but they hadn't had a referendum, David Cameron was like, okay, well, I'm going to give Britain a referendum on Europe, and thinking it was going to go one way, and it went the other way, and whatever.
Then he had to jump on his sword.
Yeah. Oh, it's so bad. But the 2 years, so the Scottish independence campaign, like, ran for 2 years, and I kind of got into it in, like, the last year.
So which side were you on, sorry?
Yes, I wanted to leave the UK.
You wanted to leave the UK? Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. That is interesting. What were the reasons?
Because Westminster is just monstrous.
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
So the amount of funding that Scotland doesn't get...
So there's
when you say,
like,
monstrous, what do you mean?
You can look up, not necessarily about Scotland, like, it's about how they treat, like, people underneath a certain class or a certain level of wealth. Like...
So it wasn't necessarily you wanted Scotland to leave, it's just you didn't want to be associated with Westminster.
Are ruled by Westminster, I think, is... I don't like this sort of ideological, like, sound bites that were used all throughout the referendum campaign. Like, I used them while I was doing it, like...
So what did, like, you actually do? Did you do the, like, the polling and hold big banners up and...
I never had banners, but I went to, like, the rallies and stuff like that, and, like, see, just if you were there, like, I wish I could take people back to that time, because it was just such a good feeling.
Mm.
Like, it was just, like, every single, like, Yes campaign rally, there was hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of people there, and everyone was in good spirits. Everyone was talking about all these positive changes that could come from it, and it was all a very positive experience. It was all about helping people. Mm-hmm. Like, it was all about helping people. There was nothing negative in that campaign. And then the No campaign was all about what we were, how shit it was going to be. Like, and people, it was like campaign fear sort of thing, so that it won out sort of thing at the end of the day.
Really, really encapsulated by the Yes and No campaign.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's the two words. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was exactly it. And it was just... And then after that, I was like, obviously the Yes vote didn't happen, and I was so convinced it was going to. Like,
it was close though, wasn't it? It was a 45...
55 to 45, yeah. It didn't feel like... If you were to be in Scotland at all while that campaign was happening, every window had a Yes sticker, every billboard was Yes, every, like, flyer you got given was a Yes flyer. Like, it just felt like every single person, no matter where you were, was, like, for independence, and everyone who wasn't didn't say anything.
It's kind of a weird cultural thing, though, to vote for non-independence. So the people who are voting to remain part of the UK and are voting no probably don't want to shout about it.
Yeah.
They're probably not going to be the people that are making the most noise. So I can see how that would have gone undetected and it would have looked like.
It's a silent majority. It was what it was sort of described as.
Right, yeah, perfect. Shit. So you, that sparked a kind of a political interest in you, and you were proactive in that era, and then obviously we've had loads in British politics since then.
Yeah.
Have you taken that up, or has it kind of faded a little bit?
So you get your political bubble.
Yeah.
It's like a sound chamber. Yeah. What's it called again? Do you know what I mean? Echo chamber, that's the word.
Yeah.
And I just don't see the point in sharing article after opinion piece after opinion piece to people that all agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And pretty much all of my friends like that I've got agree with me, and if they don't, they're not going to be changed by a political opinion piece that I post.
Yeah.
So I kind of just, I read it, I get a little bit angry about it, and then I forget that it's a thing.
Yeah, that's very,
it's like purely apathetic now.
Very similar to me. I kind of used to get really worked up about it and then realise that it's just you're not going to do anything. It's not, you're not actually. There's some people that I will engage and have conversations with and what have you, and that's normally to try and further both of our understanding.
Thank you.
Well trained, isn't it?
You're good.
I'm good, aye. I like to have political debates. Mm-hmm. Like I do like to have like those sort of disagreements with people, but because of my Scottish accent and because when I'm passionate about something I get louder, people think that I'm really angry about these things when really I'm just
animated.
Getting really into it and really animated.
Oh, I like that. I mean, I've got the similar sort of thing. I'm South African, so people are like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah,
this is British politics.
Yeah,
oh, fair enough.
That's so fine. It's like. Yeah, I enjoy having those conversations and I relish, but I also get frustrated at myself in that I don't know the details well enough.
Oh, it's impossible for... I think it's an incredibly difficult task for the average person to educate themselves with the tools that they have available now. There's so much noise out there. There's so much misinformation.
And it's all opinion.
It's all opinion and it's all directed in a certain way.
Yeah.
That it's a phenomenally... It's just an impossible task for someone to really get an unbiased view of what's going on.
Yeah. That's why I didn't want to say any of the reasons why I voted yes, because every single reason that you have for voting the way that you vote, there is like factual opinion pieces about why the opposite is true.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So there's like... It's all very difficult to just... There's no fact. Like, there is... Nothing is factual because everything has evidence to prove otherwise.
And there's context that's maybe missing or could be added or... Yeah.
No, so a lot of the yes campaign and the yes feeling was, like, based, for me, especially upon opinion. Like, my opinion of how things could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everything that I wanted was... a positive thing. Like I didn't want people to be homeless anymore. Like I didn't want people to have to go to food banks. I didn't want people to, like, I wanted people to have job security. I didn't want people, like, it was all positive reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people that were like voting no was like negative reasons for fear, like why this would negatively impact them, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Usually monetarily.
Yeah, yeah. And so now you've got, they voted, the UK, sorry, Scotland voted to remain in the UK.
Yeah.
And then Brexit happened, and then, because that means Scotland effectively leaves the European Union,
the funny thing about...
potential next referendum.
The funny thing about the no campaign was that a lot of it was based on, if you leave the UK, you'll have to leave Europe. Like, a lot of their campaign was based on...
Yeah, that is true.
A lot of the no campaign was like... you won't be in Europe anymore if you leave the UK.
I remember that big question about what currency would Scotland have.
Yeah,
yeah.
That as well. The currency was a big thing. Mm-hmm. And it was a catch-22 because the Yes campaign couldn't answer it because you can't work that out until it's happening.
Of course
you can't
not.
Get
yeah.
an agreement from anyone to make a currency and unless you are actually doing it.
Yeah.
But I think... I don't know. I think it was just funny. Like, we vote no based on leaving the European Union and then... the whole country votes to leave the European Union, except from Scotland.
You know, people are emotional, mostly.
Yeah.
They're not... I mean, the whole idea that people are rational is not true. People are emotional. They'll grab onto one line of logical reasoning that they think resonates with them, And it's very difficult once that's happened to try and persuade that in a different direction, no matter how well the argument is constructed.
People hate to be wrong.
Yeah, and they, when they find out they might be wrong, they dig their heels in rather than trying to be... People support politics now like they support a football team rather than trying to be open and objective
about
it.
Or even just political opinion. Yeah. Not even necessarily like a political party, just political opinion is supported as if it's a
Yeah, they're just diehard. Just like I'm going to go with that.
And that's as true for the left wing as it is for the right wing.
Absolutely right. Yeah, no, it's true across countries as well. You look at what's happening in the States. That's very, very true.
But that's crazy. What's happening in the States is crazy.
Yeah, no. Well, all around the world, man. Like, there's populist parties being voted in that 10 years ago you would have thought, oh, we're done with all that. That is behind us. That's not happening anymore. Gaining a majority in pretty much every first world country across the world. It's crazy. Okay. If you were to describe a 12-year-old JR... Sorry, what does JR stand for? I've never asked this before.
John Robert.
I was trying to guess it earlier on. I was like, I have no clue what JR stands for. John Robert.
You've got me on... Oh, you don't have Facebook?
No, I don't have Facebook.
Yeah. My name on Facebook is John Robert.
I don't follow the crap.
And I hate it because I used to be JR... And then Facebook made me change it.
Oh, that's bullshit.
And I couldn't put in any variation of JR. I had to just put my name in.
When will Mark Zuckerberg stop? What else does he want? He wants you to change your name from JR to...
Yeah. Fucking Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg. Okay, if you were to describe a 10-year-old JR, how would you describe him?
A 10-year-old JR?
Yeah.
So, where was I when I was 10 years old? Primary...
You still have a beard?
Never had a beard until I was, I want to say, 20.
That's still quite young for a beard, though.
I tried to have a beard before that, but I worked for Sainsbury's and they wouldn't let me, so...
You're saying that as if it's like hanging your head in shame.
Well, yeah, because I
can't grow a beard.
I could have grown a beard when I was like 17, I reckon, and I just wasn't allowed to because I worked for Sainsbury's.
Frustrating, I imagine. What did you want to be when you were younger? What did you want to do?
When I was 10, I reckon I wanted to be an author.
An author? You're quite a big fiction reader.
I was. And then the internet happened and now I don't really read at all.
You just watch videos? And...
Yeah. Pretty much, like, I got a laptop and then all reading stopped because I would just watch videos on
You like
YouTube.
Novels and that sort of thing?
I used to obsessively read. Like, when my mum used to, like, ground me, I wasn't allowed to read.
Amazing. The novels... Was your first? What would you say your first passion was?
Yeah, probably reading.
Reading novels,
And then music.
Then music.
When I was like a bit older.
What kind of music? What particular bands?
When I was, like,
What was the first band that you kind of got into? What was the first band you bought the album of and listened to it over and over? Mine was Kings of Leon, A Heart Shake, Heartbreak.
So like, I was just into music, and the first song that I remember being my favorite song was Survivor by Destiny's Child.
Yeah.
And I used to really love S Club 7. This was when I was like really young, like
it's like 6 or 7.
Yeah. Like, I used to really love S Club 7, and I remember really loving S Club 7. I think it helped that they had like a TV show, like a fictional TV show.
Right, okay. I know who S Club 7 are because I'm South African. I missed that whole thing.
Yeah.
I know people talk about it really passionately. Yeah, I know there was a TV show and apparently there were Did people become couples out of it or something?
No, it was a fictional TV show.
Oh, right, okay.
It wasn't like reality TV. It was a fictional TV show, so it was written and they acted it.
Okay.
Terribly, but...
Learning something new every day.
Yeah.
I'm foreign, it's fine.
The first album that I ever owned when I was a bit older was Hybrid Theory by Linkin Park.
Oh, that is a good album. That was like my second or third album that I ever purchased.
My best friend at the time... I don't know how it happened, but he somehow got any like Slipknot, and at that time I was kind of afraid of the screaming like angry voices, but I used to pretend that I liked it as well, that pretending that I liked it kind of became I did actually like it.
Nice. Okay, so how did that actually happen? How did you pretend to like it? You go to parties where this was on and you were like,
oh no, I was 10, like 10 or 11. Like Sum 41 was like, actually, maybe that was the first band that
All
I was like...
All Killer, No Filler.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I love Sum 41.
Like, exactly. Sum 41 was probably my introduction to that sort of community.
Mm.
So that was primary school. I would say I was like primary six. So like 9, 10-ish, I think you are in primary
six.
God,
that's young for some 41.
Yeah, I was young. I was in primary school.
Jesus.
So I had the Sum 41 hoodie. Like, I remember my mum took me out shopping for new clothes, and I was like, oh, I want to go to Hellfire, which was like the sort of emo-y rock store. Emo wasn't really a thing at that point, but yeah. Like, so it had like the chain, the baggy jeans. Wallet. Yeah, the baggy jeans, like black the t-shirt. Sum 41 hoodie.
You had the shiny belt. The one with the little silver squares. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, all that, like.
Nice.
What
was your hair? Long down?
No, at that point, it was just like normal. I was.
Like this.
I think I had blonde highlights.
Nice.
Yeah. Not as long as this. Not like it was like short back and sides. Like so this is more like Jack's haircut.
Since this is like 2002, 2003.
2002 because 2003 was when I went to secondary school.
Okay, cool.
And then I think maybe for the first 2 years of secondary school, I wasn't really into that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I was just me, just like pop music, whatever. And then
mainstream kid.
Yeah, and then my friends were all like started to go down the emo sort of route, like Panic at the Disco and My Chemical Romance, and I got really into that as well.
Nice.
And then suddenly I was like all fringes and black hair, and
and that describes you through your like teenage years.
Definitely, yeah. Like from like 12, 13 onwards, I was like into like I think initially I got any like Children of Bodom.
Oh no, I don't know them, but you know them, yeah.
Yes, I do.
So there was like an anime music video, like an AMV, which is like a big thing on YouTube at the time, and it was the Final Fantasy movie, and it was along to one of their songs, and I was like, this is amazing. So I really liked them, and then like Disturbed, and then so I was like sort of like pop emo and also like really heavy metal.
Disturbed, is that the one they had like a dragon? Yes, that's I love Disturbed.
Yeah. They're like a soft metal band.
Just that one song, it just used to hit something in me though. It was like, oh yes,
you know all the words, and it starts that screaming bit at the end where he's talking about his mummy, and it's like everyone loves to sing that bit of the song. I know all the words.
I love that song. I don't know why, but yeah, it hit something in me. I mean, when I was like 14, 15, I used to listen to Jack Johnson, so not,
but I was also listening to that sort of stuff as well.
Right, okay.
Like, I've got a very eclectic taste in music. Like, I will like really heavy, like maybe not grindcore, it's just noise, but like metalcore, like I don't really like thrash metal, but like really heavy music. Like, I would go to Download Festival and Sonosphere, and like I'd be in the mosh pits at the centre of the mosh pit with the best of them, sort of thing. Like,
nice.
But then at the same time, I would still listen to Britney Spears and.
Best live band you've ever seen?
Alt J.
Really? Wow.
100%.
That was good. We went to see Alt J last week. JR, myself, and a few friends at the Sage in Gateshead, which is like a proper opera house. And it was amazing. It was mind-blowing.
Before that happened, like my top three was a band called Manchester Orchestra.
Yeah.
Guy called City in Colour.
No, I don't know them.
Was the lead singer of Alexis on Fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack
and Inner Shikari.
Oh, Inner Shikari, yeah.
Solid. But that was just like.
I saw Manchester Orchestra in. I think they were meant to play the Academy in Newcastle, the main one.
Yeah.
And then they didn't sell enough tickets, so they played the Academy 2, which is like.
Tiny.
Like a quarter of the size.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. Yeah, well, they're a pretty intense band, so.
So, like, Manchester Orchestra, like, I was like, I'm in an ann about going to it. Like, a couple of my friends were going. I didn't really know them that well at the time. Like, I knew a couple of songs and I quite liked them. So, I went along to the Academy. I lived literally like a 2-minute walk from the Academy at that point. Walked along. It was just after 9. And they're like, nah, the box office is closed. You can't buy a ticket. And I was like, but I've got the money and you've got tickets. Like, just let me buy a ticket.
Do the thing.
So the bouncer just came out and was like, just go upstairs. So I got to that. I got into that gig for free.
Nice.
Didn't have to pay.
Was this the same one I was at? In Newcastle, or was this in...
No, it was in Glasgow.
Oh, okay.
This was like 4 years ago, 5 years ago maybe. It was a good while ago. Maybe.
Yeah, so it was a long, long time ago I went.
Yeah, so I got into that for free. I missed like the first song. And then from that point on, like their musicality, like the everything about how they performed was just so good. Mm. Like the guy's voice was on point, like all their like instrument playing was on point, and I was like, this is amazing. And from that point on, I've just loved Manchester Orchestra. Like,
it's always a big letdown when you are like a big fan of a band and you know the words when you go see them live and they just don't sound anything like that. I did that with the Foo Fighters in 2005.
Oh, really?
Went to Radio 1 Big Weekend in Sunderland. They were like my favourite band ever, and Dave, to be fair, he did like a throat infection already, but I've seen him a few times since, but they're still not as good as what they sound on the album. But then I went to see the Black Keys at the arena, which were just amazing. And then Old Shea last weekend, that was pretty epic. And then Childish Gambino this summer at a... Oh, my. I wanted to chat to you because you're... I'm from South Africa. And South Africa, I come from a very small town in South Africa, and it's like 5,000 people. Very, very kind of like... If you could imagine the deep south in America,
right.
Kind of very old school, very conservative, very like formal. And then I came to Newcastle and there's so many people from different walks of life, and it was like, I'd never met anyone that was gay before.
Really?
Yeah, I'd never met.
Well, you probably had, but you just didn't know they were gay.
Probably,
they
were, yeah. So I'm very open-minded. I'm very kind of like accepting of all people, but I'm interested at the same time.
It's surprising, like usually like from... those sorts of places, people aren't open-minded.
I think if people stay there, they're probably not open-minded. But moving was a big thing for me because it taught me that the world's not as you think it is.
Yeah,
there's so many different parts of it.
And it's part of why I wanted to move from Glasgow.
I think moving for anyone is just a great thing. It's really, I found it really difficult. I really struggled with the move when I was younger. I moved at 16.
To the UK.
Yeah, to here. Yeah.
To Newcastle or
straight to Newcastle? Oh, yeah. Wow. So I went from like boarding school in South Africa to Newcastle College, which is like one extreme to the other. And I couldn't.
How long have you been here?
10, 11,
wow.
13 years. Yeah,
I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah. I'm effectively half Geordie.
Yeah.
I've spent almost half my life here. So yeah, I'm always interested in people from different backgrounds, but what I don't have is an understanding of how to actually go about the conversation quite well. So like people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, I don't know how to ask them questions that isn't insulting. And people do get, I'm quite honest and very blunt a lot of the time, so people can get pissed off. So
I'm the same.
If I do piss you off in this conversation, I can only apologize.
I honestly don't think it's possible.
Good, so no one can offend me either. I'm very, very, very chill that with stuff, I guess.
Like, unless you say something like death to gay people or like,
okay,
like anything like that, I'm like,
I'll make a note of not to say death to gay people.
But you know what I mean, like, or like, I think that's a bit wrong, like anything like that. But like, even if, I don't know, I enjoy having those sorts of conversations. I enjoy, because you see people's minds opening up when you have that conversation with someone who's never had that conversation, and it is really nice. Like, it is like,
no, I can see that, the kind of appeal of that. So okay, so when did you know that you were gay? Did you always know, or was there a moment?
There wasn't a moment.
No.
And I'd be surprised if many people, if anyone, would say that they had a moment. Like it's like, so when I was in primary school, a bit of an embarrassing fact, like I used to like chase, I was always friends with girls, but like my best friends were guys.
Okay.
But I would like, I thought the done thing was like to be into girls. So like, I wasn't into girls, but I'd be like, oh, I like this girl, so I'm gonna like, I used to chase people, girls around when I was in like, when I was like six.
When you say chase them around, you mean physically chase them, or
yeah, like, oh, like I want to kiss you, like,
right, got you. Like, yes, like, yeah.
I didn't really like, or maybe I did, but it was never like a sexual thing, because at that age you're not sexual, like you're 6 or 7, like it's just like you're supposed to be into girls, so. Mm-hmm. Like, I would do all that sort of stuff, so there was never really a moment, like, where I realised that I was gay. I don't know, it's hard to think back. It was from a young age that I kind of knew, though.
See, I remember...
like, eight or nine, I think I kind of knew.
So, obviously, when you're, like, very young, you don't really... I think your initial stance is, oh, girls are icky.
Yeah.
When you're very young.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't want to kiss a girl. And people tease you about, oh, this girl in your class. And you're like, no, I don't like girls.
Yeah. Screw fuck you. Girls.
Yeah. And then there was this moment where I was watching a television program, and there was a slightly, I mean, it's very PG now if I was looking back at it, but it was a slightly raunchy scene. I'm
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Whoa. What is that?
That's caused a stir.
Yeah. And yeah. Then from then on, I was like, bam, I need to find more about what this stuff's about.
Do you know, actually, if we're talking about that sort of moment, like, there was the Robbie Williams video for Rock DJ.
Oh, yes.
And he gets naked and then his skin comes off, like, but I remember the moment where he got naked that, like, there was a stir. Like, there was, like,
oh. Oh, really?
Yeah.
And what did you feel? What did you think?
I don't remember. I don't remember thinking anything. I just remember that was how I felt.
That's cool. And then, okay, so how old were you when you knew that you were gay?
Eight or nine.
So very, very, very early on.
Younger than a lot of people, I think.
Younger than puberty hits, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then how did you manage that whole process? Or what did you just kind of not really think about it, just kind of...
I think it was like going into secondary school where I realised it wasn't like... I mean, I never told anyone about it. I think you always know that you it's not something that you tell people. Like, it's okay. It's not something that's widely accepted. It's, you don't see it in the TV as normal, so you think there's something in the back of your head where it's like, that's not normal.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you just keep it to yourself, because when you're that age, it's all about being cool or being normal and being accepted.
12-year-olds, 10-year-olds, they're all very, very insecure. They're just trying to do everything to kind of...
But I think it was going into secondary school where I realised it was, like, not accepted, because, like, the main insult of the day was, you're gay, or that's gay.
Yeah.
And you know that guys liking guys is gay, so it's like, keep it silent. Like,
you felt pressure to kind of keep it silent, or was it not necessarily pressure, but you...
Yeah, societal pressure. It wasn't like anyone was putting pressure on me to keep it quiet, because no one knew.
Yeah.
So it's just societal pressure to keep it to yourself. I think it's less so now, from what I've heard from a lot of younger people. Like, people are coming out earlier and earlier, and it's more accepted generally, but like at that point... 11 years ago, I guess. Like, it was 11, is that right? No, like, almost 20 years ago. I was 7. I don't know. But, like, don't know the details, but I just remember, like, it wasn't something that you would tell people.
Yeah. And when was the moment that you came that you thought you needed to tell people, you needed to act on it? This is something that other people need to know about.
So, like... your sort of coming out story, like,
kind of, yeah, I suppose, yeah, like, yeah.
It's not, there's not a moment where you come out, like, you're coming out for the rest of your life, unless I think unless you're like very effeminate and like super stereotypically gay.
Okay,
I don't want to generalize. It's difficult to say without generalizing, but I'm fairly like. A lot of people meet me and they're kind of surprised by the fact that I'm gay.
Yeah, you know, likewise, I didn't...
Not necessarily surprised, but like, just like, oh, I didn't think that. Like,
but you yourself and Michael, I suppose, you don't know instantly. Well, I mean, I'm a terrible example because I just... Yeah,
you've not been around that even at all. But I remember going into secondary school and it becoming more of a thing where like, you have to keep it quiet. So like, I went through like, pretty much all of secondary school and... I was just as much calling people gay and fags and queer, like, because when it becomes an issue that you have to hide, the best way to hide it is to be involved in the persecution of it.
Got you. That is interesting. Yeah.
So like I was, and I think a lot of people were the same, like that I know anyway, would go through secondary school and they'd be like, oh, that's gay. Oh, you're gay. Oh, you must be gay. Like, sort of thing. The first time I came out, I was 16. To my best friend at the time.
You literally sat him down and said...
Her
down.
Yeah. And I didn't sit her down. I was on MSN.
So 16, this is... 8 years? 7 years after you've kind of realised that... So it's a secret... Not a secret, but something you kept to yourself for a long, long time.
Yeah. And that was over MSN.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't say it. Like, wow. I couldn't type the words. Like, I'm gay. I couldn't say it. I just gave her all the information and made her say it back to me, and I agreed.
What information did you give it?
I can't remember.
But just basically, I think
like
this,
I need
this
to tell you something. Like, I don't even know if it was like this guy or like whatever. Like, it was just like, I've got to tell you something, but I can't tell you. And like, this is how I feel. And like, not necessarily like, oh, I fancy this guy or anything. It was just like, it's not the norm. It's not. I honestly can't remember the conversation.
And her reaction? Was it like...
Surprise.
Oh, was it surprise? It wasn't like, oh, well, I know this already and everyone knows that it was surprise and...
Yeah.
Okay.
I think maybe I was 15. Yeah, it was a good reaction. I've never had a bad reaction.
Really? Like, you've never come across anyone that you've told and they've reacted negatively? So that's awesome. Because you hear about people who... And that must be incredibly difficult. But yeah,
of course.
Nice and supportive for you that everyone's been supportive.
Mm-hmm. So I'd say, like, I would say the official point where I came out to the world, I was 19. I wrote a post on Tumblr and scheduled it to post to Facebook while I was at work, so I couldn't stop it from posting.
Wow.
So then I posted to Facebook.
So there was that element of like, well, I might back out of this.
I probably would have if I could have.
I might, that is kind of that trepidation to it. I'm so scared of the consequences. Not the consequences, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the nervous reaction. That I'm just going to do this and then I can't stop it and then it goes.
Well, I would say there was 3 points. Like, the 3 main points was, like, I told my best friend when I was 16
mm-hmm.
over MSN, or she told me and I agreed when I was 16. I told a few more of my best friends over the years between that, but then not long after I told her, we used to write letters to each other. Like, we went to the same school and we hung out all the time, but we used to write letters to each other and just pass them over, and she would write a letter back, and I'd half written a letter back to her not long after I told her. I worked in Sainsbury's at the time, like part-time while I was at school, and I'd left it on my room floor because I was very messy. I still am a very messy person. Like, I left it on my room floor and my mum decided that she'd had enough of my room being a mess and she was going to clean it. So she found it and read this half-written letter, and I got back from work and she's like, I've got something to talk to you about, like, come through the living room. And I was like, fuck, like, what have I been caught doing? Like, what have I done wrong, sort of thing. And she was like, I found this. And I remember just sitting there in silence.
What did you feel when she said that? Did you feel you were in trouble, or do you like...
I think it was mostly relief.
Oh, right, okay.
Because I'm not that close to my parents aren't my friends, sort of thing. Like, I don't know at what point I would have told them, but I wouldn't have been...
I got you. So at the back of your mind, you were loathing the future kind of obligation of having to tell them, and this did that for you.
So by it did it for me.
Without
so,
any of the trepidation or build up.
So she found the letter and I was just relieved because I didn't then have to tell her, and she had like phoned my sister and my mum and my dad and told them immediately, like, I found this letter, because she was stressed. Like, I think your mum, or my mum anyway, always had this vision of what my life would be like in the future, and it would be like, have a nice wife, have two kids, have a nice house and a good job. Like, that was her vision for my future.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's totally turned upside down on its head.
It's hard for people to let go of certain visions that they've had.
Yeah. So I think we talked about it. I can't remember the conversation. Like, I don't, as you'll be able to tell, I don't have a very good memory of like things like that. But like, I remember we sat and talked about it for ages, and I explained to her and she was like, you're sure it's not a phase? And I was like, no, like, I know it's not a phase. I've known that I've been gay for like 8 years at this point. Like, and then like, I told my friends like throughout the years afterwards. Like, usually I was very drunk when I told them, because it just gives you that Dutch courage, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. Yeah, and they were, as you say, they're all always supportive.
Yeah, always like.
Was everyone shocked? Not shocked, but like, was there an element of surprise? There was no one who was like, oh, I kind of knew.
See, it's kind of difficult because, so I told my best friend, and it turns out that she had actually told all of them individually.
Right, okay.
So I never really got to come out to them. They
oh,
were
that's
all like,
bullshit.
They were all kind of like, yeah, I knew because, like, she told me.
Were you annoyed by that? I'd be annoyed.
Very annoyed.
Yeah, I'd be annoyed.
I didn't have any sort of confrontation about it.
If she ever watches this, she gets to know exactly how you felt about it.
She gets to know I don't really talk to her anymore. And it is a shame. Like, I would like to reconnect with her because we were so close.
In her defense, I bet she doesn't even realize how big of a thing it is.
No, that's
for
it.
Someone.
And I've never told her. I've never confronted her about it.
It was just a bit of gossip that she had. And
I just kind of faded my friendship out with her. Which is maybe a bit shitty, but I kind of felt within my rights to do so.
I think you're well within your rights there. I think if you'd had a full-blown argument with her, that's still probably within your rights, because yeah. It's a bit of a shitty thing to do.
So the first point was, like, I came out to her. The second point was my mum found the letter, and then my family knew. Mm-hmm. And then the third point was when I sort of came out to the world, which was through the Tumblr post via Facebook. And all my friends at the time, like, they were, like, all the metalhead friends that I had, so we went to festivals and stuff together. And none of them were surprised, because I was so close with my friend who I'd first came out to, but there was never any sexual relationship there, so I think they were like, "He must be gay."
Right, got you. Yeah.
So none of them were surprised, and then I get mixes. Like, some people are surprised, some people aren't. Like, from this point on, I think whenever you start a new job, it's always something I'm wary of. Like, I take a step back from. Like, I won't be like, "Oh, I'm gay." I'll just be like, "Oh, my boyfriend," or
right.
Like,
are you very conscious of that first initial hint?
Always.
But even though you've never had a bad reaction, you've always had positive ones, you're still wary of it.
Yeah.
I mean, in a lot of ways, sorry if I'm speaking that or saying something I shouldn't hear, but it's a shame that, because there shouldn't be any reason.
Well, it's a societal thing.
Self-conscious of it.
I think it's like it's like in the background, like. I don't know, you just don't know what people's reactions are going to be. Like, you don't know, like, generally people aren't, like, Westboro Baptist Church style homophobic. Like, they're not, like, going to try and lynch you or, like, say anything bad to your face. But there's also just, like, you don't want people to react or change the way that they are around you.
Mm. Yeah, like, no, I get that, yeah.
So I always try and do it early, but I will gauge the situation. Like, I'll gauge who it is I'm talking to. So there's a young guy in the place that I'm working now, and that's not going to be my store, so I don't really give a shit. But I was like, "Oh, so I've not met this guy. Who is he?" And he was like, "Oh, he's the gay one." And I was like, noted. Like, he's young though, like, he's young, and I think he's just like...
No, but are you noting the fact that he's gay, or are you noting
no,
the
he's
fact
not
that
gay.
Someone has said...
This guy isn't gay who said that. He just said that about his colleague. I was like, is Joe?
But he's that's
like,
what I'm asking. Are you noting the fact that Joe's gay, or you mentioned the fact that this guy has said that this guy's gay?
I've noticed that he said it, and the way that he said it,
yeah, got you,
as if like that's the big part of his personality, and I'm like,
she's like an undercover gay at that point.
A little bit. I mean,
reconnaissing
everyone else,
what people's attitudes are.
I've worked with this guy for an hour, so like I don't know him, and I don't give a shit if he knows that I'm gay or if I'm not gay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I never was like, "Oh, I'm gay as well." Like, I didn't make a deal out of it. I just noted that he said that in that way.
Interesting. Yeah, it's just something to be aware of, that other people just straight people just probably don't have to, because it doesn't even cross their minds.
Yeah, you don't have to say anything about, like, you just like, "Oh, that girl's hot," and everyone's like, that's normal. Yeah. No one's like anything, really.
Yeah, it's just
so it is like it's always an ongoing process for
that's
everyone.
Interesting. That is interesting. So what was it like meeting your first guy or your first boyfriend, or had this happened before you came out, or
everyone I've ever went out with I've met like online?
Oh really? Okay. All Grindr.
Yeah, well, Grindr-esque sort of situation. So my first boyfriend was through Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
So that was when I was 20.
So that's your first boyfriend.
Yeah.
But before then, had you had any encounters
with
guys?
That's my first encounter. Like,
that's
my
your
first
guy.
Encounter was with
must
my first
been,
boyfriend.
That must have been quite nerve-wracking. I mean, it's nerve-wracking for anyone.
Yeah.
Their first sexual encounter, their first kiss, whatever. But I suppose with guys, like... I'm trying to think back to my first kiss and what have you... it happened before I was even aware that I was straight or gay.
Yeah.
So you kind of, that's already happened. And then that's something that's a process as well that you kind of get used to. Oh, that this is what it feels like to kiss a girl before you know that you even like kissing girls.
Yeah. I mean, I had like, so when I was 15, I had a girlfriend.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I'd kiss girls. Mm. Like, one of my other best friends in high school, we used to make out all the time because it was fun.
Mm.
But there was never any sort of sexual... situation, and I don't even think that she felt there was any sexual situation between us. We were just really good friends and we really got along, and kissing is fun.
Do you speak to her still?
Let's
go on there, Jack. Carry on.
Not really. Like, I still talk to her occasionally, I see her on nights out, but I've kind of grown apart from quite a lot of my school friends.
Mm. Well, that's natural, I suppose.
Like, she moved away to Edinburgh, Like, she was the most alternative person that I ever knew, and she was like a big influence on my music taste, and I just thought she was the coolest person ever. And I still think she's pretty cool, but she did change a lot when she moved away to uni, as I'm sure I did have since, or have since then. And every time we do see each other, if like I'm ever on a sort of school reunion night out, we still get along really well.
Oh, just ignore that. That's not supposed to be happening.
Change it. Stop it.
Just keeping you on your toes.
So, I forgot what I was saying.
Sorry, yeah, you were talking about your friend that you had, your 15, yeah. When you were 15, you had a girlfriend that you kissed, but you've lost touch with her.
Oh, like we went out for a week and a half.
Oh, right.
At least. We were at a school disco and I lost my VL.
VL?
Your virgin lips.
Ah.
So like when you first, when you have your first kiss like with someone like, and that was at a school disco.
VL, you ever heard of that? No, I've never heard of this.
It must be a Scottish thing.
Must be a Scottish. I like it. Well,
it's just like
too old for me now. But
oh, yeah. You lost your VL with her. Like,
virgin lips.
And then we made it a few times that night because making out with people's fun. Like,
it is. It's great.
It's
I love
just
it.
A good time.
Yeah.
So like we made it a few times that night, and she was a nice looking lass, and I was, I think I'd grown into my looks a little bit by that point because I had big teeth before then. So then we were like, oh yeah, we're going out, and every single time we met after that, I was probably the most awkward person on the planet, didn't know how to act, like always had in the back of my mind that I'm going to have sex with this person, and I don't know how that's going to happen.
At that point, you know that, like, right, but you obviously
I knew before that point, but I just done it so that people didn't know that I was gay.
Do you think you would have had sex with her? Do you think you would?
I honestly don't think I would have been able to.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking, like,
I don't think I would have been able to. Like, I wouldn't have got it up to put it crudely.
Yeah, yeah.
During that week and a half time, like, she was a dancer, so I spilled Iron Brew all over her dance tights, which are really expensive. And then I called her the wrong name. Her name was Zoe, and I called her Amy.
Oh, we've all been there.
Like, literally not long after that, she broke up with me, like, via her friend.
That's fine.
And I was like, like, so grateful. But then at that point, people in school knew that I'd went out with a girl, so there was, like, less reason for people to think that I was gay, so that was all good.
Yeah. So what was it like meeting your first fella?
It was fine.
But I mean,
I was nervous before meeting him. That's what I mean. I was more nervous for the social interaction than I was for the sexual interaction.
Did you know you'd ever met anyone then who was gay before then?
What do you mean?
Before you met up with him, mm-hmm. had you met other gay people, gay guys?
Not met them. Like, I had friends who had since came out as gay, but like not in any sort of sexual.
No, I just meant like socially, kind of like. That's what I kind of meant.
Yeah, so I had friends in school who were obviously gay, like who were like really camp and sort of effeminate, and
it's from a very small town in Africa at the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So and were you incredibly nervous before that first interaction?
Yeah, like we'd talked a lot online and we'd like Skyped a lot online, so like I had kind of met him, but it is always slightly different when you're meeting someone in the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
So I met him in the flesh. And my mum and dad had went on holiday, so I had the house to myself, so he came and stayed for like a weekend. And everything else was like, just felt really natural. Did like it all went fine.
Go as expected kind of thing. That's nice.
It was long distance though, like he was from Liverpool and I was from Glasgow. He had been out for longer than me and had sex before, whereas I hadn't had sex before, obviously.
And he was quite understanding and...
Yeah, yeah.
That's nice, that's good.
Oh, cool. I got good reviews.
He posted.
Yeah.
On Tumblr.
No,
cool. So, okay, obviously, okay, again, I don't know how to ask this question, but
just ask the question.
Okay. In the gay community, you have tops and bottoms.
Yeah. And versatile.
Sorry?
Versatile.
You both?
Both.
So how do you figure out which... So are tops only tops normally and bottoms only bottoms normally? And then you have versatile, which is in between.
You have people, it's like a spectrum.
Okay, okay.
So you've got top on this side of the spectrum, bottom on this side of the spectrum, versatile in the middle. Okay. And then you've got everywhere, like every section in between.
Okay. How did you figure out, that? What were you in that first one, if you don't mind?
Top.
Okay. All right, so you knew that he was a bottom.
Before that, I'd always imagined that I was a bottom. And then when it came to it, I tried it and it was uncomfortable, which it always is the first time you do it. Then he was like, well, I'm not uncomfortable with it, so let's just do it that way. And I was like, cool.
So he was both as well?
Yeah.
He was versatile. Is that quite a common thing?
I suppose. I think most people are like slightly to one side, but I would say even less people are like at the very end of each side.
Okay.
So like you've got like bottom versatile and top versatile, which I think is where most people are.
So when you meet someone now, imagine
it's part of the conversation.
Initially.
Yeah, yeah.
Or do you prefer the top or the bottom kind of thing?
Yeah, it'll be part of the conversation.
And if you get two people that who are versatile, then that's like
perfect.
Perfect, because then that's cool. Interesting. Learning lots.
And then like, I think one of the most interesting things about sort of like gay culture is that like open relationships are kind of prevalent.
This is exactly what I was going to ask you next. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like you have a lot of gay people that are like monogamy. Like if you're in an open relationship, fuck off. Like they're very sort of anti that sort of situation because it's not normative.
Yeah.
But I think the vast majority of people in gay relationships are open to having sex with other people.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think why most straight people don't have open relationships. And when I've had...
Because society from birth tells you not to.
Maybe. But then there's also some people who will say, oh, it's because the girls won't let you. They'll be really jealous and possessive, emotions will get in the way of it.
But that's because they've been taught that if someone doesn't only want to have sex with you, then they don't love you.
Oh, maybe. Because what I was going to say was, like, I would... me personally, I don't know if I could be in an open relationship. I don't know. I get pretty jealous, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But jealousy is not a positive emotion.
No, it's not. No.
So it's not an emotion like that you should foster. Yeah. So the only way that you can stop being like that is to work through that emotion, is to really check yourself almost. Like, is to be like, right, why am I feeling jealous? And it's because you don't trust that person. And it's not necessarily because you don't trust them, but it's because society's told you that if they want to have sex with other people, they must not love you.
Fascinating. So, when was your first open? When was your first open relationship, and did you feel jealousy? And
My last relationship, my last relationship, and that was kind of always going to be open because he was a bottom, and I'm more bottom.
Okay.
So like there was gonna have to be like I'm bottom versatile, so I'm happy to top, like I'm fine doing that, like yeah. I get enjoyment out of that.
Yeah.
So I think it was always part of what was gonna be our relationship,
because
mm-hmm. you have to get your kick some way, sort of thing.
And he was just a straight up bottom.
Yeah. But like, there's so many complexities, like, from being gay just because of that dynamic, like the top and bottom dynamic. There's so many complexities.
It's a whole new
relationship
world.
Like that.
It's a whole new world that, I mean, imagine, I'm just trying to imagine going in there as a 16-year-old who's already insecure about the place in the world because it's different to the norm.
Yeah.
And then you've got to figure out all these rules that there's no normal kind of route to follow because there isn't a societal
path. But the internet
path.
Is a wonderful thing. The internet entered, like, especially Tumblr, like, that was, like, I spent my life on Tumblr when I was a teenager. Like, I was on it constantly, and that was where I, like, got all my activist sort of roots, like, was anti-racist, anti-misogynist, anti-homophobic, obviously, like, was introduced to, like, all these different ways to have a relationship, because...
So it was, like, not a go-to guide, but there was a lot of help there to help you manage the problem. Imagine the people that had to do that in like the 50s
exactly.
and 60s and stuff. That must have been brutal.
And you get a lot of people, and Grindr is obviously like a massive part of a lot of the gay community. Like, some people just aren't on it, have never been on it, have never felt the appeal or whatever, but like, and it says on your profile if you're top or bottom, or if you're versatile, or if you're versatile top and versatile bottom, so you can kind of avoid that conversation almost by, you look at their profile, and if it says, then you're like, well, this person's not suitable for me because they're only bottom and I'm only bottom, or I'm versatile bottom, whatever.
I suppose it's kind of this equivalent of, like, in the straight world, like, does she have big boobs or a nice bum?
Kind of.
Okay, so the reason why we keep having a break is just because of our technology and equipment limitations, but so we have to break every half hour, but here we are back for the last little segment. So yeah, before we were talking about your relationship that you had before this one was the first open relationship you ever had.
Yeah.
And that's quite a prevalent thing within the gay community. Most relationships are open.
I would say so, yeah.
Obviously has its upsides.
Yeah.
And its downsides.
Yeah.
How did you manage those downsides? Because I always think that those downsides are specific because there's both sexes involved, guys and girls, and there's like an element of, I don't know what you're thinking, I don't know what I'm thinking, but if it's guys, you can kind of be more cool about it, but I'm not sure whether I actually would be. If my girlfriend came to me and was like, I want an open relationship, I'd be like, whoa. So what kind of feelings did you feel when you went into one?
So I think there's different ways to have an open relationship. So you can, I would even say, if you're up for having like a threesome in your relationship, that is a form of open relationship.
Absolutely, yeah.
You've introduced someone else into your sexual relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the way to do it where like you just have like one night stands with other people, like outside of the relationship. My first open relationship was like long distance. So he was in Manchester and I was in Glasgow. So that was, it was kind of easier to deal with the jealousy. Like there was an openness sort of thing to it, but there was also like, it was very separate because it was the distance.
So what was the actual terms of the open relationship? Did you say that you can sleep with whoever you want as long as you tell me?
Yeah, pretty much.
Do you not get to a point then when you're like, he's told you about these five other guys over the last couple of weeks?
Well, we would film it and show it to each other.
Wow, that's a different kind of open relationship. That's amazing.
So it still keeps you kind of involved?
That's brilliant. Oh, that's thoughtful as well.
Yeah.
I love that.
So, but then there was still some times where like, I'm sure for him as well, it'll be, we didn't have the best of breakups, so it will be a bit weird if he watches this, but I don't really give that much of a shit. And it does feel a bit like assholey of me to be talking about a relationship when it's not the best anything anymore. But
oh, it's fine. You don't have to.
No, I just like, there's still times where he had sex with someone and I was jealous of the fact.
Well, yeah. As I said, that would be awesome before. Yeah. The immediate thought that followed was like, oh wait, if that was me, I would be watching my girlfriend sleeping with another guy on film, and that would be mortifying. I think I would react badly to it overall.
But it's like watching porn.
Yeah, but it's your girlfriend in porn, or your boyfriend in porn. Is that not weird? Is it not weird? But do you not feel jealous when you watch it?
I did sometimes, and I didn't other times. And I couldn't define why.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, like I couldn't. Such sometimes I felt jealous, and other times I didn't. And I'm sure it's the same for him. Like,
do you think the recording of it and showing each other was a good thing rather than just it being a random person, him ringing up saying, yeah, I slept with this guy last night?
I didn't always record it because some guys just aren't up for like filming it or mm-hmm. whatever. Like some people just don't want anything like that to be recorded or available for anyone to see, sort of thing. So I think like when it was recorded, it's just kind of, I think you just find it hot watching your other half get fucked.
Fair, yeah.
I think it just turns people on sometimes, and mm-hmm. I think it's probably more prevalent in the gay community. Like,
but that's a big thing in the straight community as well. Like, I know friends that have been approached by husbands of wives, and they've said, "Will you, like, mm-hmm. this has never happened to me, but they've like come to them and said, well, will you fuck my wife? I'll give you X amount of money or whatever." I think it does cross over.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's just society is getting more and more sexually liberated.
Yeah,
I think as time goes on, like it's more and more normal to just be sexual.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think historically, even up until this point, it's like your sexual life is something you should keep to yourself. So like the idea of recording sexual life outside of your relationship with someone else is like,
yeah, to a lot of people. Do you think that element of it added to the relationship, made the long distance easier, or did it bring more complicated? It must have brought some complications. Did it bring more complications than positives?
No, I think it made the relationship easier to be in, because otherwise it was like 3 months maybe sometimes between us seeing each other, mm-hmm. and then that's yeah. like it's like 3 months of not having sex where you could just readily get sex. Like that's another thing as well in the gay community, it's much easier to get laid.
Okay.
Like you don't have to do any work. Like you don't have to like court anyone. You don't have to like buy them a drink and give them the chat up lines or the like. You don't have to flirt with them beforehand. You can literally just message someone on an app, be like, "Do you want to fuck? Yes, okay, come round to mine." So they come round, you say hello, and then you shag, and then they leave.
Why do you think that is?
Because I think men are from birth taught to be more sexually charged.
So you think it's a nurture thing? Like men have been taught.
Well, like,
this
I think
way
men are always viewed as the more sexual, like creature, like mm-hmm. like. People are always like, men think with their dicks. Like that's, whereas you never hear anyone say, oh, women think with their vaginas.
So what's it like in the lesbian community?
Don't have a clue.
Okay, so just a completely
really
separate, different, okay.
Like I couldn't talk about that at all. Like,
no,
I really couldn't.
Fair enough.
You should definitely get a lesbian on your podcast and, yeah. and use this as a reference, as like a juxtaposition. I think that would be interesting. But
if there's any lesbians out there that want to come on, well, yeah. I'm happy to have you. The last bit.
It was around the time you were saying girls have bad reactions. And
can we cut that bit out?
It's not as bad as it used to be.
Let's just cut it out there. Let's be fine. Okay, so we're back again for the last segment. We've got about 10 minutes left and then the camera dies. And we were talking about open and honesty and jealousy in relationships. There's a couple other topics I want to hit, so we'll try and wrap this up.
I'll quickly say like what I just said.
Yeah,
while
off camera, go for it.
The openness and honesty, like it goes both ways. So in my relationship with my other half, like if we were out or if you're on an app, which so often happens on a like in a gay relationship, if we were out and someone was hitting on my boyfriend, I would feel 100% confident that nothing was going to happen there. So I would be totally fine with as many guys hitting on my other half, which happens a lot. Like I'm hitting on my other half, and if he was to reciprocate those sort of hitting on feelings, like he would come on and ask me and he would come and tell me, then I would give him an open and honest reaction to how I feel about that. So if I was like, generally what happens is if I think the guy's really hot, I won't feel comfortable with it. Whereas if I don't think the guy's that hot, I'll be like, okay, yeah, go for it. So it's just me being, and if I were to ever say to him, no, that makes me uncomfortable, he would immediately just cut that off. Like he would maybe allow that guy to keep flirting with him, but he wouldn't reciprocate in any sort of fashion. And I think that's what I mean about the openness and honesty in terms of an open relationship, is that you just have to be, you might have rules, you might be like, you can sleep with anyone you want outside of a relationship as long as it's like a one night stand or as long as it's just sleeping with them. But then you can still feel differently in a case-by-case basis. So it's just being open and honest about how you feel outside of the rules that you've created for your open relationship.
I suppose that last little decision that you outlined there is so important, where the person, okay, they've been hit on and they're in a relationship with you, but they come to you and say, right, I'm kind of into this. And then you tell them no. And then that last little bit where they act on what you've said.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge that's the defining characteristic of whether it works or whether it doesn't.
Like there are some people that are in open relationships where their relationship is open, not just the sexual relationship. So like the like, and this is, I've read as much about this in the straight community as like a heterosexual community as I have in like the homosexual community. Like there are people that, so I know from experience, there's a person that I know that like has a boyfriend and his boyfriend has another boyfriend, but they are not boyfriends. Like, if that makes sense.
Sorry, say that again.
So there's three people in this relationship.
Yeah.
And you've got one central figure in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so he's in a relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in a relationship with him, but okay, they are not in a relationship.
Got you, yeah.
And
that's an emotional and sexual relationship.
Yeah. For both ways, and these two people get on very well, but they're not in a sexual relationship or like in a romantic relationship.
God, I can't imagine how that must work.
But then there's some situations where all three are in one single, like, emotional and sexual relationship. It's called a triad, which is also really, or is getting more and more common in the gay community.
Have you ever been in one, or do you know people that are in them?
I know people, but I've never been in one.
What's the kind of feedback on it? Is it?
I think that's where the jealousy is more prevalent.
Because there's emotions involved more because than just sexual desire.
Yeah. Like, because sexuality, I think, is like primal. Like, you get horny and you just want to have sex. Whereas, like, you don't get... There's not a similar thing where, like, I just want to be cuddled.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm just thinking of all the relationships I've been in and how incredibly complicated they are just with two people. And now you bring in a third person into that. And
again, it's all about openness. Fully... Like, you need to give yourself up to being open and honest, because everyone has reservations about saying things out loud and talking to people, every single person, and you have to just force yourself through them, I think. Mm-hmm. From what I've read, like, from like articles that people have written about their triads or whatever, like, you just need to constantly be talking about things.
God, do you think straight people just have like the stuff that they talk about as being big problems are just minuscule and compared to, like, if someone from a triad were to go into a normal straight relationship, it would just be like a piece of piss. Like, because it doesn't sound like there's anywhere near as many variables as what they are, some of the relationships are out there.
I don't know, because I think the vast majority of normal monogamous relationships aren't as open and honest.
Why do you think that
is? Whereas I think a triad forces you to be open and honest for it to work, otherwise it falls in pieces really quickly.
Why do you think a normal heterosexual relationship isn't open and honest?
Because, like, 80% of the men in divorce.
No.
Statistically.
What do you think the cause is? What do you think the reason is for it?
People's, like, embarrassment or shyness or, like... It's difficult to be open and honest all the time. It's very difficult. It's a very difficult thing. It's just human to want to hide things that you're ashamed of or thoughts that you feel like you shouldn't have had. It's just human nature to want to keep them to yourself.
Mm.
And I think for a relationship to thrive, even a monogamous relationship, will be much stronger. And if you do say something that you feel to your other half and they think that that's like a sort of a no-go area, then your relationship's going to end and you know that that relationship wasn't right. But at least you know that, like, what you've said is how you feel,
it's honest,
and how you are, and it's honest, so you know that their honest reaction to that, whether it's fine truthful with it or not fine with it, you know that if the relationship ends, then it was supposed to end.
That was the honest way the relationship to go.
Yeah,
fair enough. I just wanted to end quickly by chatting about your tattoos, if that's okay. How did you get them, and what do they mean? So you've got, we'll take pictures of these and put them up, but you've got a little fire.
Yeah, so this is Calcifer, who is a character from my favourite movie, which is Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah.
It's a Studio Ghibli film, animated movie. And this is one of my favourite Pokemon.
Yeah, nice.
Called Growlithe. And literally, like, one of my old work colleagues and friends was an apprentice tattoo artist.
Yeah.
So I got this done for, I think, £20.
Nice, it's a good tattoo.
And I got this done for, she was a bit better at that point, so, like, I got this one done for £40, I think.
Yeah.
Which I think, they're both really well done.
They're done really well, yeah.
So it was literally, I've always wanted a tattoo, and it was a case of, tattoos are expensive and I don't have a lot of money, but this was cheap, so just fucking go for it.
Nice. No, they look good.
Cool,
great. And then did you have a good time doing it? You had fun?
I had a really good time.
It was great to have you
on and off camera.
Yeah. We didn't do anything dodgy off camera, don't we? Thanks very much.
Yeah. Cheers.